The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Chinese businesses are warning of the severe impact of Shanghai's prolonged lockdown. Car makers say they may have to halt production with their suppliers in the city unable to produce parts. The vast city's 25 million residents have been kept mostly at home for weeks now as the Chinese government maintains its so-called zero COVID approach to pandemic restrictions. Shipping giants are also warning that the Shanghai lockdown has snarled up the world's busiest container port.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, when will we be through all this, huh? Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thank you for being here today. A lot of news happening when it comes to Omicron. Flying with masks, Chinese lockdowns. Let's get to them all. Big news, and we'll get to this a little later with Dr. Robert Tobolli. Two new Omicron variants are now spreading in New York and elsewhere. They appear to be spreading pretty rapidly in the state, and I will tell you everything you need to know about that. They are known as BA 2.12 and BA 2.1.2.1. So they're very closely related to the BA2 variant, and we'll take a look at that. But in light of all the news, you know, how long has it been now since we've had to wear masks? That mask requirement, of course, had dropped. But airlines continue to persist with it. My wife and I, we had to see my daughter down in Houston last month, and I remember still wearing masks. Well, word came out, as you probably have heard, a judge nixed the extended mask mandate. And multiple airlines are saying they're no longer going to enforce the COVID mask mandates for their employees or for travelers after a federal judge moved to void the Biden administration's mask mandate for travelers. And, you know, roars of applause and relief erupted on airlines all over the country. You know, effective immediately, masks are no longer required on United or domestic flights. A lot of airlines, you can check the one you're flying on. I don't know how you feel about that. My thought on it is this. If you feel comfortable flying and wearing a mask, if you're not feeling well, if you're concerned about somebody next to you, put the mask on. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, long before mask mandates ever came about, I remember just watching Europeans, and in particular, a lot of Asians. They would wear masks all the time, you know, if they were not feeling well or if they were traveling. And I think, man, and they used to look strange to Americans. I think today, it's going to look pretty common. Unfortunately, the way the media has taken this and the way the different political parties have taken it, becomes more of a political message, wearing a mask or not wearing a mask anymore. And I hope that's not the case. You know, if you need to wear it, wear it. If you've got compromised immunity, wear it. All right. And you know, if you don't wear one, be tolerant and understanding of those who do. I like the fact that you don't have to wear them on the airplanes anymore. That's pretty clean air there. You know, my colleague Patrick Madrid sent out a tweet, I think it was last week, I was away, and it got something like 8.5 million views, went all over the place. And then soon afterwards, I began to see, in fact, a friend of mine sent me a video, and I'm not going to put it up. I was going to share it with you, too. I thought about it. He says, I mean, Drew, let everybody know about this. Maybe I will put it up, but it's kind of graphic. And I don't mean in a licentious way. It's graphic in terms of the reality of what's happening over in China. I mean, there's video of souls, of individuals, of citizens in that country jumping from balconies there. They're jumping out their windows. They're jumping off of rooftops. There's been a massive lockdown there, as you know. And it's just absolutely horrific. In fact, let me play some of the audio for you. Now, yeah, when I first heard this, I thought, could this really be true? Or is this somehow, yeah, I'm always a little skeptical when I hear things. After seeing what I saw in this particular piece of video, I think it's true. Check this out. Just for, you know, in terms of radio, take a listen to this. This is from Patrick's tweet. Listen. I mean, people are locked down. Listen to that. You hear that? That's real. That's the voice of frustration. That's the voice of hunger. That's the voice of incarceration, because that's what's happening. People are being padlocked in their homes. They're not allowed to leave. They're not allowed to go out. And a lot of people, I saw one gentleman in one of the videos I watched, he planned for 5 days of lockdown. He's been locked down for weeks and just doesn't have any food. I mean, it is graphic. It is brutal. Really, in a lot of respects, it is unjust. The question is, why are they doing this, right? Is there something more to the picture than meets the eye? Are they really trying just to escape, the spread of COVID, of another variant spreading? Steve Mosher, who's been a friend of the program for years, you might remember him from the Population Research Institute, written all sorts of books. I was talking to him about China's hegemonic philosophy to rule and to dominate the world years and years ago. They are, as we know, the U.S.'s greatest competition. The CIA director says that they're, we've never faced a challenge like we do with China. Steve actually wrote an article that I saw, and it's well worth reading. We'll repost it for you. We'll go ahead and put that up on our Twitter account. And he talks about how over the weeks, 26 million people languish in their apartments, staring at empty refrigerators, unable to step out of their buildings. Otherwise, they'll be hunted down and ultimately arrested. I invited him here today just to give us a perspective on what's happening there, what he knows, and to give you a view from the inside. China's a place of population control, as we know. I'm even seeing reports now of the Chinese allegedly executing prisoners for their organs. They're removing organs. And of course, we know the human rights abuses that take place with the Uyghur population there. Steve joins us. You can check him out at pop.org. That's pop.org, Population Research Institute. It's good to have him back. Steve, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Always a delight to have you. Hey, great article, very thorough and very telling, very revealing. I shared in a very broad stroke what's going on there. Maybe you can give us a closer view of what people are saying and what they're experiencing.
Well, what's happening in China makes no epidemiological sense whatsoever. This cannot be explained in terms of COVID. And let me tell you what I mean. You've got 26 million people now locked in their apartments in Shanghai. They've been locked in there for 3 weeks, in some cases, in some neighborhoods, for 4 weeks or longer. All right? Every day, every other day, they're testing these 26 million people because they've sent in tens of thousands of healthcare workers from all over China, and they're swabbing everybody's nose every day, every other day. Now, if you happen to test positive for COVID, even if you don't have any symptoms, you are hauled off into a quarantine camp. And these are not five-star hotels. These are big warehouses. These are apartment buildings. These are places that have been hastily converted into shelters, quarantine shelters, what you really might call them, concentration camps. You're not allowed out. They're guarded by the police. No one is allowed in or out. And they're being kept there. And some have been kept there for, as I say, almost a month. And those quarantine sites are very, very poorly supplied, as you might imagine, because, look, they didn't exist a few weeks ago. They were created out of nothing. And there are actually pictures of people fighting who are sent to the quarantine camps. Probably 15, 20, 30,000 people every day are sent to the quarantine camps because they test positive for COVID. And you have pictures and videos of them fighting over bottles of water, Drew, over blankets. Over food packets, because everything's in short supply. I just saw a picture of one quarantine camp where, of course, they have no beds. So what they did was they went and they got a whole bunch of big cardboard boxes. And they put these big cardboard boxes with open tops on the floor of this warehouse, hundreds of them, and people are sleeping inside. These are cardboard boxes about the size you can put a refrigerator in. And that's a bed that people are given to sleep in with a blanket. For days and days and days on end. And the kicker of all this is that 95, 96, 97% of those who test positive for COVID actually have no symptoms. They're asymptomatic. They may just have a few viral packets in their nose that happen to turn up on the swab, maybe a false positive, who knows. But symptomatic or not, they're hauled off to these hastily erected quarantine camps. But the people in the camps actually might be better off than the people locked in their apartments, the ones who test negative, because you're not allowed out on the street. And you mentioned somebody with 5 days of food in the refrigerator. I think there were some people, elderly people in Shanghai, who probably didn't have 1 or 2 days of food in the refrigerator. A lot of people are elderly in Shanghai. A lot of people, young and old, live alone. And think about being locked in your apartment alone for weeks on end with no food. It's no wonder that they're going out, and medicine. It's no wonder they're going out on their balconies and screaming into the night. And when I listen, you see, I read, write, and speak Chinese. And what I hear those people saying on the Patrick Madrid video were, we're starving to death. We need food. We're dying. We're going hungry. We haven't eaten in a long time. That's what they're saying. And, you know, I'm afraid that at the end of the day, when they finally end the lockdown and go into some of these apartments where people have been locked up for a week on end, they're going to find lots and lots of dead bodies. People died of stroke, heart attack, just the stress of the thing. People died because they ran out of their medicine, their insulin for diabetes, or they ran out of their blood pressure medication. They were under stress. So they're going to be probably more people dying from the lockdown itself than from COVID. In fact, the Chinese government claims no one's died of COVID in Shanghai. Imagine that. Wow. They've locked down 26 million people. They have a few thousand cases of people who actually have symptoms who are infected. They have what they claim are no deaths. I don't know whether that's true or not. You never know about what the Chinese Communist Party says. And they've locked down 26 million people. That's why I say it has nothing to do with medical science. Right. This is all about politics.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment. So the broader picture. What's the purpose of this? I mean, we're going to see disrupted supply chains. We're going to see the loss of life in their own country. The optics of this on an international scale, the fact that it's getting out, is not good. What's China? What is the CCP trying to achieve? What's their end goal?
Well, I think there are two things going on that explain the COVID horror show. One is, of course, they're very reluctant to abandon the impossible dream of zero COVID. Mm-hmm. They think that they're a socialist country, a communist country with total control over the population. And they think if they set out to eliminate a highly infectious airborne respiratory virus, they, for goodness sake, can do it. And they're insistent upon doing it. So, yeah, I mean, no political organization, no political politician wants to admit that they got it wrong, right? And the head of the National Health Commission just said the other day, if we stop all containment measures now, it means all the previous efforts were for nothing. Well, of course, they were for nothing because you can't stop a highly infectious airborne respiratory virus. So why are they still doing it? Well, part of it, I think, is an expression of the Communist Party's drive for total control. Yeah. You know, I'm reminded of the Communist Party official who back in 1980, at the beginning of the one-child policy, said, quote, we're a socialist country. We can control reproduction in the same way we control production under a state plan. And they were talking, Drew, about controlling the birth of babies in the same way they control the production of automobiles and refrigerators under a state plan. And now Xi Jinping's attitude seems to be, we're a socialist country. We can control the replication of a highly infectious airborne respiratory virus in the same way we control production under a state plan. They can't do it. They won't do it. They will fail. But there's one more thing going on here. Mm-hmm. I said politics. I mean high-level politics. Xi Jinping is supposed to be up for a third term in October. The rules say that he should have stepped down after two terms, 10 years. Yep. But he changed the rules in 2018, and he wants to be reelected. And his opposition is based where? His opposition is based in Shanghai.
Well,
guess what? He's just locked down Shanghai. Who's in charge? He is.
Right. Absolutely. That's fascinating. My guest, Steve Mosher, if you want to join us, I only have him for a few more minutes. Fascinating. An expert on China, population control, and so much more. Our number, 888-914-9149. Speaking of Shanghai, I was reading earlier today that there's an indefinite lockdown right now. This is a city of about 25 million people. It's one of China's premier manufacturing and export hubs. So the quarantines there have led to not only the food shortages that we've talked about, the lack of medical care. They're killing pets. You see dogs, cats, and other animals being just terminated there. A lot of people are upset about that as well. But it's also leaving the largest port in the world understaffed. So apparently the port of Shanghai handles over about 20% of Chinese freight traffic, and it's at a standstill right now. So food supply is stuck in shipping containers. Stuff that needs refrigeration is rotting. We've got Shanghai's marine terminals. They're all being backed up. So we're going to see the ripple effect of this on the supply chain throughout the rest of the world. But I'm also curious, Steve. You know, we're talking about 400 million people across 45 cities in China that are under either full or partial lockdown. What's this mean to their GDP? You know, their annual gross domestic product. They're the second largest, you know, economy in the world. Is there something more economically going on here that we're not necessarily looking at? Is there a strategy behind this?
Well, I think the strategy is political control on Xi Jinping's part and being elected president for life against the Shanghai clique, who they were in power in the 1990s and in the early years of 2000 under Jiang Zemin, the former president, under Zhu Rongji, the former premier. And Zhu Rongji has come out and said, we need to not elect Xi Jinping for a third term. We need to abide by the 10-year limit on serving as the head of the Chinese Communist Party. Well, I don't think she liked that at all. No. So I don't think that has the economic costs are irrelevant in the calculations of the senior leaders of the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, we had one of the great monsters in human history in charge of China for decades. His name was Mao Zedong, Chairman Mao. Chairman Mao presided over the killing of tens of millions of Chinese. And so in Xi Jinping's view, what does it matter if a few thousand people die unnoticed inside their apartments in Shanghai if he can continue to seize and hold power? The economic costs are tremendous. Yeah. Drew, they're going to lose a percentage or two off their GDP because of the lockdown so far. Not just in Shanghai, as you mentioned, but in Liaoning and other cities throughout China. Whenever they find a few cases, they lock down the entire city in pursuit of this nonsensical COVID zero policy. And you said they're killing cats and dogs. Yeah. Well, so what? They can kill every rodent in the city, all the rats, all the bats. They'll have to do that because there are natural reservoirs for the COVID virus in all mammals. So you can't achieve COVID zero unless you kill all the mammals.
Yeah, speaking of killing mammals, I mean, I think of the human rights abuses that are taking place with the Uyghur population in that country, as well as, you know, really a genocide. They're organ harvesting. They're doing all these other things. Let's put into perspective that, because this is one thing that I've always scratched my head on. I mean, we know this is taking place. There have been people who've testified to it, who've endured it and lived through it. We have the footage. And yet the world has been relatively silent on it. I mean, the Olympics went on. There was some protest, but still, the Olympics were held. I boycotted in person. I didn't watch them. I didn't want to give China the even one set of eyeballs. But you know, put it into perspective in terms of what's happening there when it comes to respect for the human person. You were a big champion of life, and you called out their one-child policy. Now they're realizing that policy is not that great, and they're allowing for more children to be born. Where are they on the child policy, the gender imbalance, and the genocide that's going on in their country?
Well, China's in the middle of demographic collapse, and it's obviously because of the one-child policy. They've eliminated 400 million of the most productive, enterprising people on the planet, killing them before birth and immediately after birth. Now they've got an aging and dying population. China is actually filling more coffins than cradles each year, has been for the last 2 years. The government doesn't want to admit it, but it's a fact that China's population is aging more rapidly than any human population in the world, and they've got a very, very low birth rate. I don't think there's any coming back from this if they leave it up to the people to decide for themselves how many children to have, because they tried in 2016 to go to a two-child policy. And everybody said, no, you've been telling us for 40 years that babies are expensive and difficult to raise, and we don't want more than one. And then they went last June to a three-child policy. Again, the Chinese young people yawned. They don't want to get married, much less have more than one child. So I'm afraid that we're going to see in the future, not too distant future, the Chinese Communist Party again controlling reproduction in the same way they control production under a state plan. And the state plan will call for young women to get married under duress and to have at least two or three children. There will be, I predict, in the years to come, forced pregnancy, artificial wombs, other things developed in China to stave off the population decline. And, you know, there won't be any moral reason, an ethical reason, on the part of the Chinese Communist Party leaders not to do this, because they're totally amoral.
Yeah, no doubt about it. My guest today, Dr. Stephen Mosher. Let's grab a call or two. As I said, I am for a few moments. So, fascinating topic, doctor. I'll tell you what, there's so much to talk about here. Todd in Lexington, Kentucky. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. I'm kind of curious. I keep hearing more and more in the news about China becoming linked more to Russia as, I guess, an uncomfortable ally because of the West severing ties with the Russians in terms of economy, they're supporting their economy through not purchasing oil and freezing their accounts, at least the wealthy and their accounts. How do you see that kind of panning out for not just the United States, but actually the rest of the free world?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I think that's a grave danger. And I think that the worst possible outcome of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which should stop today. We want to stop the carnage. We want the two sides to sit down and end this war now. People are dying unnecessarily. But the worst possible long-term strategic outcome is for Russia and China to forge a new Sino-Soviet bloc. You know, back in the 50s, we had Russia, the Soviet Union, united with the People's Republic of China, dominating most of the Eurasian landmass. We don't want to create that kind of alliance again, because if you combine Russia's natural resources, oil, natural gas, grain, and other minerals, with China's population and industrial base, they're a power capable of dominating the world. So we need to end the conflict in Ukraine. We need to urge both sides into negotiations now, and we need to forestall the creation of a hegemon capable of dominating the world.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, thank you. Speaking of hegemony, that is their philosophy. A CIA director says they've been our greatest challenge. Clearly, they are a competitor. They're now, building new nuclear weapons. And, the U.S., I think, has got to have a serious conversation about its relationship with China. I'm not anti-Chinese. I feel bad for the people there. I'm anti their political system. How do we decouple from this cheap goods that we are hooked on? It's like a drug for us, What do we do? Otherwise, this relationship's going to continue. When COVID-19 took place, we had to get our medicines, our masks, a lot of stuff from the Chinese. Look what's happening with Russia right now. There was a conflict over Taiwan or somewhere else. Boy, the U.S. could be brought to its knees in a number of different ways. But I'd love your take on that. Their long-term view and our addictive, relationship.
Well, they do have a long-term view. The Chinese Communist Party has a 100-year plan. And by 2035, they want to be the dominant power in East Asia. They already are to a large extent. By 2049, they want to be the dominant power in the world. And that will not just be relegating to the United States to second place. The plan is to move all industry to China and use the rest of the world as a source of raw materials and as a source of food to feed China's workforce, and of course, as passive sheep-like consumers of made-in-China products. That's not a world that I want to live in. Yeah. We need to bring manufacturing back to the United States. We need to reinstitute, keep in place tariffs, in fact, raise tariffs on Chinese goods. The last time we did that under the Trump administration, we not only made a lot of money in tariffs, we also started seeing supply chain shift, not just back to the United States, but to Canada, to Mexico. We started making goods, buying goods made in democratic countries that share our values and our institutions, countries like Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, India. Those are the countries that we should have these close ties with, because we may one day be in conflict, as you point out, over Taiwan or over some other aggressive act on the part of China. And we do not want to be beholden to them in any way for medical supplies, for drugs, for pharmaceuticals, the way we are now. It's a very dangerous dependency, because they will, in the event of conflict, use it against us.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump, when he was president, had a very different position with China, with tariffs. This administration, radically different. Will a new administration, you think, bring us in a different direction? And if we persist down this path for another 4 years, we'll have it seven. We've only had the Biden administration for a year right now. What do you think that portends for the future?
You know, it's only been a year, but it seems a lot longer than that, Drew, for me anyway. And apparently we have three more years to run. I'm very, very concerned about the position taken by the Biden administration vis-a-vis China. They're finally beginning to wake up to the fact that President Trump got it right in terms of China policy. After a year of watching China's aggression towards Taiwan, aggression in the South China Sea, aggression towards India, and all of its, virtually all of its near neighbors. Yeah, we have to take seriously the threat from China. And, you know, you pointed out the first foremost victims of the Chinese Communist Party are the Chinese people themselves, because, you know, nearly 100 million have been killed in various purges and famines in the past 70 years. And of course, if you add to that the 400 million little victims of the one-child policy, my goodness, you're up to a half billion people. This is the biggest killing machine. The Chinese Communist Party is the biggest killing machine in human history, and the world would be a better place without it.
Well, Dr. Stephen Mosher wrote an article. You can check it out. We'll link over it. We'll put it on our Twitter account. I hope you're following us at Drew Mariani Show. It's called China Leading Citizens to Jump from Balconies in Quest to Achieve COVID Zero. And he lays out exactly what's happening out there. Doctor, I also understand you have a new book out. Fill us in on that. I can't wait to talk about that in greater detail.
Well, it's a book that we've all been living for the last 2 years. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. And I look at all of the pandemics in human history, the major ones, going back way back to the Plague of Athens in 340 BC, when we learned about what? We learned about natural immunity. It's right there in the writings of the early Greek historians. And through the Plague of Justinian, the Black Death in the Middle Ages, the Spanish flu, and of course, SARS-1, SARS-2, the Asian flu, the Hong Kong flu, and so forth. Interestingly enough, all of those major plagues came from China. This is not a criticism of the Chinese people. It's just to say that there have been a lot of people living in China for a long, long time. And when a plague gets started, when something passes from animal to human, in the past, there's a big population that it can spread in and then spread from there to the rest of the world. But of course, the last pandemic was unique because it didn't just happen as an accident. It happened in a lab. And that's a discussion probably for another day.
I appreciate having you on. I look forward to that. My thanks, Doctor. Always good to talk with you. It's Dr. Stephen Mosher. Check him out at pop.org. It's Population Research Institute. Check out his new book and his article we'll have up for you. It was a New York Post article, but you can find it by linking over to it at the Drew Mariani Show, at Drew Mariani Show. Coming up, Dr. Robert Tabali will join us. Let's take a look at some new Omicron variants, the increase in blood clotting, how to know whether you've had it or not. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. Always a delight to hang out with you and give you a look at life you probably won't find anywhere else. Coming up in about, 25 minutes or so, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. It's a great week. It's Easter week. We're closing in on the great feast of Divine Mercy. If you really are praying for something important, why not join me today? And why not right now while you've got a few minutes, text or email or just pick up the phone and say, hey, let's pray together. We'll join in with literally hundreds of thousands, millions of people around the country and around the planet invoking God's mercy. And I know that God hears these prayers, so many answered prayers coming in. And we're grateful for the crosses that God gives us, but we're also jubilant about the answered prayers that come in. God does exist. He is real. He's in control of everything. We cannot fear. Even when we face difficulty, like plague, right, or the threat of war. I think of Matthew 25, you know, where it talks about war and rumors of war and, you know, the earth rattling and shaking, and there's plagues and viruses. I mean, we're seeing these things in our own day, right? It's so bizarre. And I said to my wife earlier this morning, I was talking about broadcasting, how life has changed for businesses in general, even Relevant Radio. Some of my colleagues broadcast remotely, and what COVID did. for a lot of people. Our realities have really changed. There were masks, now that just become so commonplace. If you're just joining me, I shared the story about how the airlines are now dropping these mask requirements after a judge nixed the extended mandate of the Biden administration. And, of course, there's lockdowns in China, which we just talked about, and there are reports now of new variants. Two new Omicron variants are spreading in New York and elsewhere. At least that's what's being reported. The variants are BA2.12 and BA2.12.1, and they've been detected in New York and in other states as well as, I think, five countries. And one is a mutation that seems to give it an edge in evading the immune system. So let's talk about that today. What's on the forefront? What are we going to encounter? I saw a story the other day, too, talking about how we're not done with COVID, right? COVID's not over, but people are over COVID, right? People are over COVID, and I get that. There are now possible breathalyzers that can detect whether or not you have it. I want to talk about the symptoms of it as well as blood clots and what's on the forefront. I'll give you an opportunity to get into. So let me give you the number. If you want to join the conversation, you got a COVID question, great time to do it because Dr. Robert Tabali is back. And you can join us at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And Dr. Tabali, as you know, is an infectious disease doc and has guided us through these months of COVID and its continuing evolution. Doctor, good to have you back. Thank you for your time.
Great to be with you, Drew. Interesting segment before this one. I need to get a copy of that book. Sounds like a great book.
Yeah, by Dr. Mosher. Yeah, too. I'm going to bring him back to talk about it. I'd love to have you in that conversation as well. I know you and I have talked in the past about the Spanish flu, what has happened. And let's start there. Maybe that's a good place to take a look at. You know, 1917, 18, that flu took place. It killed, you know, tens of millions. What was it, 500 million people in the end is one of the numbers I thought I saw. I could be wrong on that. 50 million, is that what we're looking at?
I think 50 million. I think
50 million. So say it was 50 million people. Yeah. It went on for several years, and then slowly it began to fade away. What are the parallels between the end of the Spanish flu, the 1918 pandemic, and what we're seeing here? Is there a difference? I mean, clearly Omicron took a lot less lives, but or, you know, not Omicron, but COVID-19 in general. But your thoughts on that. Where are we? What are the parallels? And what can we look forward to?
Well, you know, back then they didn't have antibiotics or dialysis or ventilators. So a lot of people died because they had bacterial superinfections on top of the Spanish flu or as a complication of it, post-influenza pneumonia and so on. So, you know, we're dealing with a different situation now, but a lot of the things that we have in common with that time are unrest of the population with continuing to adhere to these, or I could call them restrictive impositions on them. You know, people started refusing to wear masks back then after a few years, and they just got tired of it, just like we're getting tired of it. And you know, it's kind of interesting. I think maybe silently the politicians are kind of applauding the fact that that judge forced the mask mandate on airplanes to end. I don't think the politicians really had quite the strength of character to stop it, because if something goes wrong, then it's going to be their fault. One thing that we're seeing here locally is a lot of people getting co-infected now with influenza and COVID. And a lot of the patients are very, very asymptomatic now with a second or third case of COVID or COVID after vaccination. Very, very mild symptoms. Don't even know they have it. And they might get infected with influenza. They come to the hospital and shaking, chills, fevers, that type of thing. Do the tests and find that not only influenza, but COVID positive. And that's one of the things we worried about in the heart of this was them shifting their genes around and, you know, one becoming more maybe aggressive than it had been earlier. But these new variants and everything, you know, we're going to continue to see all these new variants. It's going to happen. It's going to keep happening. But as more and more people have gotten infected, more and more people have gotten either natural or vaccine-related immunity, I mean, this is really going to turn into more of a common cold issue. And, like, when do we stop testing for this stuff? I'm not sure that it's that time yet, But, you know, for those of us that have had it or have a vaccine-related immunity, I think that we don't need to worry much about it anymore. But the people who have never gotten vaccinated or never had it naturally, they're still going to be at risk this year, next year, or the year after from catching one of these viruses that will continue to circulate in our communities and continue to make people sick.
Do things get better, though? I mean, now that we're entering spring, the weather's getting warmer, the summer will be here. Of course, when the fall comes back around, you know, flu season happens, I think we'll see a spike again. But what do you see for warmer weather? Will these cases diminish? You know, will be like any other flu season when it comes to COVID?
Well, some of the things that happen with heat and humidity and cold and dry is that in the cold and dry times, people are congregating together indoors, and particles that emanate from our mouths, the infectious particles, they seem to be favored by cold, dry air, and they're able to move further and spread further. I'm not sure how that affects COVID. We would think that it would be the same type of influence as that if you're not congregated in an area where everybody's breathing the same air over and over again, we're going to have less COVID transmission. It's probably going to follow all the other seasonal viruses, worse in the fall and winter, and less in the spring and summer. It didn't really happen the first year we were suffering with COVID because there was such a lack of any kind of immunity in the community. But in the summer of 2020, we continued, as you remember, to have a large amounts of COVID, but nothing near the winter outbreaks that we had. But, you know, this is like the Spanish flu, just all of a sudden one day it just stopped, you know, and that's kind of what's going to happen here. It's going to fall off the radar, and we'll still be able to see it. I'm not sure if it's this month or if it's going to be the fall, but sometime this will just kind of fall off the radar and it will become background noise. You know, people will get sick from it. It'll turn into like influenza. People continue to get sick and die from influenza every year. People will continue to get sick and die from this every year, but it won't be the same numbers.
Yeah.
And most everybody, when they get reinfected, re-exposed to the 20th new Omicron variant that comes down the pike, it'll just be sniffles or maybe a bit of a sore throat and not much more than that.
So are we over this whole boosting thing? I there was an article I'd seen the other day about how we can't really boost our way out of the COVID-19 pandemic for the long term. And in fact, some of the research was indicating that too frequent immunizations may lead to a phenomenon called immune exhaustion. Maybe you can speak to that, because I know that I think President Biden has his fourth shot. You know, he's been boosted and then boosted again. A lot of people are very concerned, and there are people who want to get, you know, multiple shots. Can you expand a little bit on that premise of immune exhaustion and whether or not we can boost our way through this thing?
Well, out of charity, I would like to donate my fourth booster to President Biden as well to keep him well. So anyway, the boosters seem to only have an effect for about 3 months. Okay, that's number one.
Right.
Number two is, and it's kind of telling, is that the person who headed up the FDA's vaccine division and the person under that person, who are both vaccine experts,
mm-hmm.
they both resigned because they didn't believe that we should have approved boosters in the first place. So they're now gone. And, you know, this new third and fourth booster actually came out not from the FDA, but it came external to that, really kind of being announced by the CDC or the White House, not the organization that has the means by which to approve it. So the boosters are only effective for this thing, you know, this neutralizing antibodies or trying to prevent infection from actually occurring. But if somebody got doubly vaxxed early on with the messenger RNA vaccines, then they maintain And we saw this through Omicron. Even if they finished their series a year before, they had continued protection against serious illness and death. They might have gotten sick. They might have needed some oxygen, but they didn't progress towards like respiratory failure, needing a ventilator, kidney failure, that type of thing. They did very well.
Yeah.
And so most of us in this field aren't sold on the booster effect.
Right.
Now, if someone's had an organ transplant or they've got leukemia or lymphoma, that's a different kind of patient. But for young folks that are not seriously immunocompromised, that the boosters really probably don't add anything.
Well, doctor, stay with me. We come back. We'll take a few calls. I have the doctor, maybe 10 minutes, and then we'll pray the chaplet. But you can get in at 888-914-9149. mRNA vaccines. Did you get one? True or false, they produce persisting spike proteins, likely causing clots, heart inflammation, and cancers. That's what one doctor is saying. We'll get Dr. Tabali's take on that. I'll tell you about a new breathalyzer that can detect this. And much more. We'll take your calls. Feel free to join us. We're back right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
That's right. Pray big, believe big, trust deep. You'll see how God responds. We'll pray coming up in about 10 minutes. Love doing that with you. So, as I said, if you have a real important intention, feel free to try to give us a ring. We'll try to get you on the air. If not, you can put your intentions up on our Twitter page, at Drew Mariani Show. Maggie will bring them to you during the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I'll be praying for a friend of mine. He's got surgery tomorrow. I want to pray for his wife and so many others. There's some really important intentions, but feel free to give us a ring. If you are just tuning in, we're just bringing you up to speed on the latest. Earlier in the hour, we spoke to Dr. Stephen Mosher about the lockdowns, Chinese lockdowns, people jumping from buildings and screaming and starving to death. And you'll have to take a listen to that if you miss it. It's well worth revisiting that conversation. And Dr. Tabali's here as a follow-up, taking a look at some new Omicron variants that are out and some of the latest news regarding sensing the virus and so much more. Doctor, let's jump right in the phones. We'll go to Frank in Capitol Heights, Maryland. Frank, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Dr. Tabali.
Oh, thank you, Drew, for taking my call, and Dr. Tabali. Happy Easter. And question that I had for the doctor was, do you know when they're going to have the Novavax vaccine available, and how many shots would someone have to get for that, and would it cover all the new variants? Thank you very much.
Great question. Thanks.
Well, the Novavax is, for some reason, kind of being slow walk there at the FDA for some reason, and have no idea. Every week I check the schedules to see. The vaccine committee meets once a month, and it hasn't been on their agenda yet. And one would have expected to have been on their agenda a month ago or more. But the Novavax is a two-shot vaccine, very highly effective, very low side effects. It's not messenger RNA technology. It's like a traditional vaccine that we're all used to. What you get shot into your arm is all the antigen or all the vaccine particles that your body's immune system is going to see. The messenger RNA actually kind of shoots the ingredients in, and your own body's skeletal cells, muscle cells, actually make the spike protein and so on. So there's some things about that that are significantly different. The Sanofi Pasteur vaccine that we talked about here on the program that appeared to be 100% protective against hospitalization, serious illness, and death is not moving forward at the FDA at this time either. There was talk that they might apply because of that very significant impact. That also is a traditional vaccine. And that, of all the vaccines, that's the most, if I can call it, ethically pure one, vaccine that has been made. But again, if it doesn't get approved here, it can't get given here, but the Novavax is available throughout most of the world, approved in Canada, approved in Europe, approved in Japan, approved in India, but not here, approved here in the United States. But people that get vaccinated overseas, when they come to the United States, if they've been vaccinated with Novavax, they're judged to have been fully vaccinated if they had two shots of Novavax. However, it's not anything that would be approved if your work mandates you get vaccinated. Getting vaccinated right now with Novavax overseas and then coming back does not check those boxes for your employment.
Doctor, speaking of vaccines, I understand that the FDA just has authorized a breathalyzer, the first breath test to detect the coronavirus. It's called the InspectIR COVID-19 breathalyzer, about as big as a piece of carry-on luggage, and the subject's got to blow into that thing for about 10 seconds. And the breath test detects, I think, 91% of positive cases and more than 99% of negative cases, but you need a professional to do it. Performance was on par, I think, or maybe even better than those home nasal swabs. What do you know about this breathalyzer, and is that the new frontier for testing as, let's say, the fall comes around or new variants rise?
Well, that's kind of a holy grail of testing. I mean, this could be used in a lot of different other fashions. I mean, we do know that dogs can sniff cancer on the breaths of certain people, and so if we could harness that technology and put it into something like this, yep, that'd be great. This looks like an early cell phone, as you were describing. It's like a suitcase, and it's a cord attached up, and you breathe into a paper straw that gets replaced. But I think there'd be a lot of hesitancy for people to breathe in and out of a machine that somebody else breathed
right
in and out of that detected the coronavirus. Yeah. But there's a lot of different applications for Helicobacter pylori infection or other sorts of things that we know that there's variants in the breath. There hasn't been a breathalyzer-type diagnostic testing method available yet. This is really the first of its whole species of new machines that will come out probably based on this type of technology. It's not going to be widely available. Yeah.
Let's do this. We'll grab a couple calls. Only a few minutes. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Dan in Eagleville, Pennsylvania. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I just would like to see if Dr. Bali would be able to talk about, I heard in the news, I think it was from Switzerland, they did a study saying that these messenger RNA shots, it's not a vaccine, they're saying that they change our DNA and that we're susceptible to immune diseases from it.
Okay. Did you make that out, Doc?
I did, yeah. So the caller was saying that the messenger RNA vaccines can change our immune system and so on. There's a lot of things that we're going to know, we're going to be revealed about this over the next couple of years. A lot of the papers that were assembled by Pfizer during their trials are now being released in small, 10 to 11,000 page packets. One thing that I've witnessed in my patients, some of the patients that have gone on to have long COVID, is some of the viruses that we get infected with that become part of us, like herpes, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, HHV6, which causes roseola. Some of these things can actually reactivate after both natural infection and after vaccination, and can lead to a long COVID-type symptoms where you might have fatigue and malaise, shortness of breath, and just really kind of no interest in getting up and going anywhere. Now, it's interesting that also the vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines, have been used to treat long COVID in people who have gotten COVID and then turned into having long COVID symptoms. There's a subset of people that get COVID and they can have low-level viral replication in their bodies in various areas, and the application of the vaccine could actually help their immune system, trigger their immune system, shut it down. There's a first published case of a guy with something called Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. It's a kidney disorder, immune system disorder, and he had active COVID replication in his body for like 6-8 months, got two shots of Pfizer a month apart, and he was, quote, clinically cured from his long COVID symptoms. But there's a lot of different things that appear that they could be factors in long COVID. Another interesting thing, not only these viruses reactivating, I've seen patients that have had negative Lyme tests, get natural COVID or get COVID vaccination, all of a sudden their Lyme test turns positive.
Wow.
And, you know, their symptoms can become worse, you know, their Lyme-related symptoms. And so that's kind of bizarre. It'll be very interesting to understand over the years, as we find out, does this cause immune suppression in one area of the range of the immune system while it's actually activating heightened awareness in another area of the immune system?
That's fascinating. Well, we'll have to talk about it in greater length in the not-too-distant future. Doctor, thank you again for your time and for your expertise. It's a delight to be able to tap into it, and I'm grateful for it. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure to be with you. Please say a prayer for me. Thank you.
I will. That's Dr. Robert Tobolli. In fact, speaking of prayer, let's remember him as we pray the chaplet. We're just about a minute away. And if you want to get in this Easter week, here's a number for you, 888-914-9149. We'll invoke God's great mercy. And please remember Dr. Tobolli. Put him down on your prayer list and say a prayer for him. He's involved in some really important work, even outside of medicine. I'm always grateful for him. We'll come back. I'll bring you some petitions, maybe some answered prayers, and we'll take your calls as we invoke the unfathomable mercy of God. Stay with me.